Hello and welcome to Dairy Pod. I'm John Penry from Dairy Australia. In this episode, we shall hear from the inspirational Samantha Bloom, three-time world parasurfing champion and author. Samantha is the 2024 Young Dairy Network conference presenter and joins Dairy Australia's project manager, Carly Potts, to share her personal story following an accident that led to her spinal injury. Samantha opens up with an inspiring degree of self-awareness, positivity, and brutal honesty about her challenges and coming to terms with her injury. She talks about her path through depression and anger, and how the kindness of others and the process of telling her story helped her find meaningful purpose again. And before we jump in, please be aware that this episode does contain themes that may be upsetting for some of our listeners. If this does raise personal issues for you, there is help, and you can contact Lifeline on 13 11 14 or Beyond Blue at beyondblue.org.au.
Hi, I'm Carly Potts of Dairy Australia and your host today. In this episode, I'm excited to introduce you to Sam Bloom, the inspiration behind the best-selling book and number one box office hit movie Penguin Bloom starring Naomi Watts, and our keynote speaker for the New South Wales Young Dairy Network Conference. If you're tuning in today and have not yet watched Penguin Bloom or read either of Sam's books, Penguin Bloom or Heartache and Birdsong, I strongly recommend you make them next on your list. Sam's story about her accident in Thailand in 2013, which left her paralysed, is confronting and deeply personal. It reminds us how fragile life can be and raises so many questions about how we ourselves might or might not cope with life-changing events. Sam, however, has since won two Oceania KL1 Para Canoe Championships and is the two times Australian, Hawaiian and three times world para surfing champion. Today, Sam and I are talking about adapting to change, community leadership and anything else that comes up in conversation. Welcome, Sam.
Thank you, Carly. Thank you for having me.
Oh, very excited to have you. For those who haven't got to know you yet, can you share a little bit about your story and the odd little bird who saved your family?
Yeah, sure. So my husband Cam and I have always loved travelling, and we have three boys, and we wanted to essentially instill our love of travel in them. So our initial plan, this was 11 years ago, was to actually take them to Egypt and Ethiopia. But unfortunately, at the time, it was too dangerous to take them to Egypt. So we thought, oh, no, we better not. And we settled on Thailand. So we took them to Thailand. You know, it was all good. It was a bit touristy for us. So we decided to go north. And we're halfway between Phuket and Bangkok, about 4 days into our holiday. And we're staying at quite a remote resort. And one of the kids spotted like a stairway up to an observation deck. So we thought, oh, yeah, we'll go up there and have our juice and just look at the view. So we went up and then I leant against the railing and it had dry rot, but I didn't realize. So I fell 6 meters and, yeah, broke my back and sustained numerous other injuries. So can't say it was my favorite holiday, that's for sure.
No, one that none of you will ever forget.
No, definitely not. Yeah. Oh, yes. And so it does sound odd, the odd little bird who saved our family. So I was in hospital for about 7 months. And, you know, going from someone who's really active to being paralyzed from the chest down, it was hard. It was hard to wrap my head around it. And so when I came home from hospital, I was not in a good headspace at all. You know, I used to say to Cam that the real Sam had died and just this shell came back. So I was so sad. I was so sad and angry when I came home because it was kind of like you come home and it's like, wow, this is my new reality. This is my life and I hated it. And so about 3 months later after I came home, my middle son Noah found a little baby magpie that had been blown out of her nest. And we thought she would have died if we left her. So we picked her up, brought her back home. And she changed everything. She changed the dynamic. She just made everybody happy and it actually took the focus off me, which I like. Because I hate being center of attention. You know, everyone would come up and be like, oh, how are you? And, you know, give you that kind of sad pity look. But when we named her Penguin, the magpie Penguin. And when we've had Penguin, everyone would just come up to see Penguin, not me, which was kind of perfect.
I think it talks to the power of relationships you can have with animals as well, that
oh,
you know, 100%. You don't need words to communicate, do you?
No, you so don't. Honestly, I think animals are the biggest healer because you can talk to them about everything and they're not judgmental.
Very true, very true. And I know in your book you talked about which surprised me, but I understand that your hardest day was not actually the accident or being told that you were paralyzed. You recall one of the hardest days of your life being actually coming home, which people would often think would be, you know, obviously, and you said you looked forward to it, that it would be, you know, a good day, but the reality, I guess, set in, and yeah, then yep. Penguin coming into your home and your life made it that bit happier.
A little bit happier. Yeah, I know. Like, yeah, thank goodness we found Penguin. Like, it just changed absolutely everything. I know it does sound weird because even Cam and the kids were so excited. They're like, yay, you know, mum's coming home. And yeah, and I just felt so bad because when I came home, I just, it feels like you just drag everybody down into your sadness and guilt and just anger. So yeah, that was a very challenging time.
I bet. I bet. And you've already just touched on a little bit about, in your book, you describe yourself as a shy but determined Australian girl. And obviously, you know, a lot's changed from when you became a nurse and travelled across Africa to now. But I do wonder how a shy girl came to share her life story with the world. And were you prepared for the publicity this brought you and your family?
Yeah, I know that does sound so weird. Hey, how an introvert wants to get their story out there. It all happened really organically. Like, we had no intention of actually making, like, writing a book. What happened, because Cam's a photographer, and so he takes a million photos. He was always shooting Penguin and the kids, and sometimes me with Penguin. And then as a joke, one of the kids said, why don't we start an Instagram account? And so we did. We called it Penguin the Magpie, and it just kind of went a little bit crazy. I think what happened was a journalist from Brisbane saw some of the photos, and he did a story on it. And that's when it went, like, mad. We were getting messages from people from all over the world, like, about us, and we thought that was so funny. I remember Cam and I were lying in bed just laughing, going, how bizarre is this, you know, that people are kind of interested in our story. So that's when publishers started contacting Cam and saying, oh, we want to do a book on you, or like, write a story. And at first we were like, why on earth would anybody want photos of our family? You know, why would they buy a book with photos of just a family in it? And then Cam contacted Bradley Trevor-Grief, who's an Australian author, but he lives in LA, because he's written, obviously, quite a lot of books. And Cam just reached out to Bradley sort of saying, I've been contacted by publishers to write a book. What do you think? And then Bradley goes, give me 24 hours and I'll see what I can come up with. And yeah, he came back to us the next day and said, you know what, I want to write your book. So that's how it all sort of started.
Wow.
It was just very strange. It all just kind of kept falling into place.
Fantastic.
So yeah, no, it was. It was really good for me, actually, because I'd never met Bradley, and him being in LA, we would just Skype all the time. And it was just kind of, yeah, he was a bit like my therapist, I guess. I would just, it would be like what we're doing, just chatting, and I would just tell him everything. And yeah, it was just nice to sort of get a lot of stuff off my chest. Things I didn't want to tell Cam necessarily.
Yeah, that's interesting. Look, I think that talking things through, you know, getting things out does always help. And I guess there's some things you don't want to share
yes.
with your partner as well. So.
Yeah, it's so true, especially when they've got a lot to deal with. You know, you think, I mean, Cam had to kind of deal with my accident and then the boys and working, you know, and running the house. And, you know, I didn't want to just keep bombarding him with, like, all this negativity, which was going on through, like, in my head. So, yeah, no, it's true. I think if you can find just that one person to open up to and you feel totally comfortable, it really helps.
Well, you certainly found the right one, because he did a beautiful job with the book and sharing your story. So you were born and raised on the northern beaches of New South Wales, which has a real sense of community, and you still live there today with your family. As a role model in your community and more broadly to all your followers, and also the charities that you represent, what are the messages that are important to you to communicate to others, Sam?
Oh, mate, that's a tricky one. I think my main message would actually be, like, just don't put your dreams on hold. You know, don't, just get out there. And that's the one thing I'm really thankful for. You know, I guess maybe I was a little bit selfish, but it's, you know, okay, you said I went to Africa when I was 22. I always wanted to go to Africa. And then I was like, right, I'm just going to go. You know, I've always done that. If I wanted to go to a specific country, I'd just save up and then go. I've always wanted, like, if I wanted to do something, I just do it. And I'm so thankful I don't have that regret of thinking, oh, I wish I'd done this or that. Like, you know, just follow your dreams. So that's one message I always say, especially to young people. And also, I think just being kind to people, it can change their life. I mean, that happened to me. It happened, well, probably more than twice, but well, the first time was with my kayak coach. She lives obviously where we're near me, and she was just so kind to me and just so, I don't know, just so, so she treated me normally, which sounds strange, but I loved that. So she sort of changed everything for me. And also, I got this random, this was 5 years after the accident, because I used to surf a lot, because growing up on the beaches, that's what you did. And then after my accident, I was like, well, I'll never be able to surf again. And I got this random letter of this lady, her name's Nola Wilson, and her son was an ex-professional surfer. And she's like, oh, I know how much you love the ocean, and, you know, I think you should get back in there, get back on a board. And so I did. So that, just that random act of kindness completely changed everything for me. So I think, yeah, I just think, just be kind to people. Because
great,
you don't
advice.
Know what impact that can have on someone who's going through a rough time.
Absolutely. And follow your dreams.
Yeah.
Yeah, don't delay. Yeah.
No, don't, because you don't know what's going to happen tomorrow.
Perfect advice. What are the things important to you to achieve using your influence as a public personality?
Oh, geez. Well, obviously, I'm trying to raise money for Spinal Cura. Like, there's it's called Spinal Cura Australia. And they're just, you know, they're trying to get money to raise, just to put into research. They're trying, you know, obviously trying to find a cure and get people up walking again. So that's a big thing for me. I know, I think I'm too old now. Like, I think they will find a cure, but I don't think it's not going to happen soon. So for me, it's kind of like for all these young people. I've met so many young people who've had a spinal cord injury, like 16, 17-year-olds, and that's devastating. So, yeah.
Yeah.
The more money they can raise and the more research, yeah, there'll be the chance that these kids can get up and get walking again.
Absolutely. And I know some young people who had that experience, you share their story in your book, Heartache and Birdsong, and it's quite confronting listening to their stories about
it. It's so sad.
Absolutely.
It's so sad because, you know, I mean, I know how hard it is, and I was 41. And I'd travelled, I'd have kids, and, you know, I'd kind of up until that time had done not everything I wanted to do, but, you know, a lot. And, yeah, when you hear, get a message off a 17-year-old, it's like, wow, it's just so, so devastating.
Great that you, I think your positivity and focus around there being a cure in the future and working towards that for those younger ones in the future is really special.
Yeah, but yeah, no, but I mean it, like, yeah, because it just sucks.
Absolutely.
It really sucks being in a wheelchair, but can't change it. Not yet.
Not yet, that's right. yeah, you mentioned that you're a mother and you've got three boys, and they're actually around the age of our Young Dairy Network, who you'll meet at our conference. What advice do you give your boys as they seek adventure in their career paths that maybe the Young Dairy Network can learn from as well?
Yeah, well, again, like, follow your dreams, and I think also just do what you're passionate about. Like, if you're into music, or if you're into making things, or if you're into being a farmer, whatever, if that is what you're passionate about, then 100% just, yeah, stick to it. Even if people, you know, say, oh, no, you shouldn't do this or you shouldn't do that. Like, just, yeah, if that's what you love doing, then do it. It was funny because yesterday, Cam was telling me, because he's a photographer and he'd always wanted to be a photographer. And when he was about 16, his dad said, oh, why you want to be a photographer? You'll never earn any money, or, you know, you can't make a career out of it. And, like, thankfully Cam ignored his dad and he followed it. Like, he followed his passion and he's an amazing photographer. So I just think, yeah, just don't listen to people who put you down. Just follow your dreams and do what, yeah, do what you love. That's what we've always told our kids, and they sort of have, which is unreal. Like, Ruben, our eldest, he loves making things, and so he's got his own business called Made by Ruben. Oh. He makes furniture and, like, homewares and stuff. And Noah's always been passionate about music, so he's at the conservatorium in Sydney doing music composition. And Ollie, our little one, He left school early and now he's a personal trainer. Wow. So I think it's just really nice to see people doing what they love.
Absolutely.
You know, because yeah. you want to love what you do. You don't want to hate your job and, you know, it being a chore. You just want to have the lifestyle that you enjoy.
Absolutely. And that's probably the biggest thing that dairy farmers say is, you know, it's not work. It's a passion. They love it. So.
Yeah, which I think is fantastic. I mean, what more could you ask for?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, I am so in awe of the strength that you've had to achieve so much since your accident, Sam. And I have to say that it scared me to consider whether I could be at all courageous facing life-changing loss and pain as you have. So I was relieved by your honest reflections of the hate of your wheelchair and what it represents to you. You wrote in your book that there's a part of me that's always angry. I don't deny it. How do you control the permission you give yourself to feel that way, but then balance it with finding some peace with the situation that you're in?
I know, isn't that funny? I think, honestly, I will always be angry and sad deep down. But, you know, I can't let that kind of rule my life. So I think for me, the thing that's got me going is just, yeah, like I said, just find things that you love doing and things that make you happy. I mean, sure, and it is kind of weird because I absolutely hate being in this wheelchair. Like I've said, I hate being paralyzed, but you can still kind of have fun. You know what I mean? Like, it's kind of like gravel and diamonds, you know? Like, not everyone's life's perfect. I think everybody has a story. And I think you shouldn't let the bad kind of dominate you having fun. It's like, don't let the bad take over the good. You know, like, yeah, I don't know, that sounds so weird. Like with the surfing, I mean, I used to surf and then I always thought, no, I can't surf again. But, you know, now it's fantastic getting back out in the ocean. Sure, it's not the same and I do get a bit grumpy sometimes and I would do anything to be able to be on my own. But, you know, you can still have fun and you can still go out with your friends and it can be like a bit like the old days. So, yeah, I don't know. I've met a lot of people also who aren't angry and they're totally cool with being in the wheelchair and their accident. I was like, wow, I find that incredible. I just don't think I'll ever fully accept it. I still wait. You know, it's been 11 years, right? And I still wake up thinking, come on. Like, it's not me. I would do anything just to be me, just to be me again. Yeah, it's a strange feeling. But I think the key for me as well is just being busy.
I think if you are busy, that.
Yeah, like seriously. If I have nothing on, because then I just know, I go back into that, you know, the negativity and that dark space. So I think just keeping busy, it does help. It does help when if you're not feeling great about your situation.
I think your strong self-awareness is something that I took away from reading your book. And when I wasn't crying, I was laughing at your reflections of others' lack of self-awareness and how you tactfully managed some of the most tactless of questions. Do you think you're still learning about yourself? And is there anything you've learned about yourself recently that you'd be willing to share with us?
Yeah, sure. I think I'm constantly learning about myself. 100%. I think I've become, I used to be very passionate. I mean, passionate, compassionate person and very patient. And I think, yeah, I think as the time goes on, I just become even more and more patient because I do spend a lot of time waiting around for people. I am still learning. I think every day it's just like you just learn more and more like about your body, which is really weird, and what you're kind of capable of. Like, okay, for example, last month we actually ended up taking the kids to Ethiopia. And I never thought I'd get back to Africa. And I remember thinking before we left, I was a bit nervous, to be honest, thinking, you know, I thought, I'm going to end up getting really angry and sad and it's not like how it used to be, which is kind of obvious. But I was kind of proud of myself because I just, even though I'm stuck in the wheelchair, even though I needed everyone to push me around and help me, I loved it. Like, I was pretty stoked. You know, I didn't complain much. I could have, but I didn't complain much. And I just embraced it and enjoyed it. So, yeah, it was a lot better than I thought it would be.
Yeah, I follow you on Instagram and followed your adventures in Ethiopia recently. And I think it really touched me that you have not been deterred from your adventurous spirit and travel, and you have really encouraged that of your boys as well. So it's great to see you still getting out there. And yeah, sure, it'd be a very different experience, but it, like you say, it was always a passion, and it's great to see that still living on.
Yes. Yeah, no, I know. So I think that's what I have learned about myself, is that you can still do things that you used to do. You just have to think of a new way to do it. But that's okay, because, you know, you still have, like, can have the best time ever.
You're an inspiration to so many people. I'd really love to know where you go for inspiration from others, and where you go internally for inspiration.
Okay, I'll answer the internally for inspiration. I think, and this will sound so weird, I remember it was a couple of years ago, and I'd won my second world title, and I was at the gym, and I was just thinking, like, I don't know, I was probably feeling a bit lazy, and like the weights were quite heavy. And then in my head, I'm like, no, come on. You're meant to be this two-time world champion, so you kind of suck it up and just go harder, push harder. I think that's where I get my inspiration, my internal inspiration from. Thinking, and I don't want to sound like a total tosser, you know, going, oh my gosh, that's so amazing. But just, I think in my mind, I'm like, yeah, think of what you have achieved, because it's pretty cool.
It's very cool.
So that's kind of what inspires myself, just to keep trying to get better and maybe win another world title. Or yeah, that's my internal inspiration. And from inspiration from other people, geez. I mean, it's not necessarily other people in wheelchairs. It's probably like the reason we went to Ethiopia. It's like people like Dr. Catherine Hamlin. Like, she was an Australian lady. She went over with her husband, oh my gosh, over 50 years ago, and they were obstetricians. And yeah, and they were fixing fistulas, which is a problem girls get when they're in labor and they can't get the baby gets stuck essentially and can make a hole in their bladder. And so Catherine went over and yeah, started this hospital and ended up living in Ethiopia. And she to me is like an inspiration, because she's so kind and she's changed so many, like hundreds of thousands of girls' lives, just by fixing this, like, you know, this hole in their bladder. So yeah, people like that I find very inspiring. I think people who are just kind and humble. I like people who are humble and don't talk about themselves like I just did then. You know what I mean? Like, they to me are the most inspirational people.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Thank you. Thank you for sharing that. To talk about dairy farming, and I touched on earlier that dairy farming is not work, it's a passion. And so many farmers feel like they're losing their identity when it comes time for them to transition off farm. I imagine that following your accident, you struggled with your identity for some time. Can you tell us a little bit about that and any advice you have for others who are struggling with their identity change?
Yeah, sure. I mean, that was probably one of the hardest things to actually deal with. Obviously the physical challenges were quite tricky, but yeah, the loss of identity. Like I said before, I was like, well, Sam died. You know, I came back so different. So I really struggled with that. And I was sort of embarrassed, like if people from my old life would come up and see me now in a wheelchair. And, you know, because before, like, I was the striker on the soccer field. I was always running. I was always surfing and mountain biking. And that was who I was, always being active. And then having lost that, yes, mate, losing your identity is really, really tricky. So I think slowly, I think I kind of regained a new identity, still being active. Like, obviously, when I got out of rehab, I started kayaking. And when I got onto the para canoe, the Australian team, I think that's when I sort of had a new identity. I wasn't the same person, but, you know, I was still active and still keeping busy. And yeah, so sport for me.
I guess that was a link back to you, how you had seen yourself previously, isn't it?
Yes.
Like, as being active, and then you found a way to still be
active
and sporting. Yeah.
Yeah, 100%. So I think that's how I regained my identity. I mean, sure, it's not the same, but yeah, no, you're spot on. Yes, I was active, and then I still found a new way to be active. It's just not the same. But yeah, man, that by far losing your identity is the hardest thing. So I think, yeah, you just have to find different ways to kind of reshape your identity, I guess, like what I did with the sport.
Yeah, absolutely. And it makes me think about some really great dairy farmers who have stopped farming themselves but really kept involved in the industry and in other roles where they can mentor the younger ones coming through or, you know, shape the future of the industry on different boards and committees and things. So, yeah, we're still able to retain their knowledge in the industry, and I guess it still gives them that connection like you to, from being sporty to you know, to being able to sort of maintain some of that identity going forward.
Yeah, so. Absolutely, because that does change everything, because then it will give them a purpose. Because when you lose your identity and you feel like you don't have a purpose, that's so hard, because that's exactly how I felt. But yeah, like what you just said as well, if you have a purpose, it can just change everything for the better. I think that's the key. Everyone needs a purpose and a goal. Because if you don't have that, you kind of go, well, what's the point of getting up? And that's hard. It's hard feeling like that.
Definitely. New South Wales farmers have endured prolonged drought conditions and followed a little too closely by some storm and flood events, only to be back in dry conditions. They're really rejecting the word resilient, and I can't blame them. Having these things forced upon you and coming out the other side doesn't happen with some pretty deep scars. And I wondered if you could talk about the triggers that you have around your accident and how you manage these.
Yeah, sure. It's hard. It was funny because I actually don't remember my accident. I don't remember going up the stairs. I don't remember falling. But I think the one thing that does trigger me, and it will sound super weird, is looking at the bush and the ocean. I think it reminds me of my old life. And I really struggle with that, especially in the first year. You know, I'd look at the, because we can see the beach from our house, and I can see my favorite surf spot. And so I would just sit here and I'd look at that, and it would just make me so angry. So I guess it did trigger just that anger and sadness and grief, actually. So I don't do it as much now. I remember saying to Cam, I was like, I just want to get off the beaches. I hate living here. I just want to go in the desert where there's no people and no ocean. So it just didn't get rubbed in my face all the time. So, yeah, no, I think, yeah, that is hard, because it can also be bittersweet, because sometimes even now I'll get in my car and I'll drive up to the bush, kind of where I used to mountain bike, and I love it, but it's sort of bittersweet because it's like, here I am just sitting in my car when I should have been out in the bush on my mountain bike. So, yeah, so things like that, yeah, do trigger, I guess, just that whole grief kind of comes up. But, you know, I guess the way I've dealt with it is thinking, well, I can still go to the beach. I just have to obviously go with Cam or someone, you know, to carry me down to the beach. So, yeah, I think you just have to realize that, you know, it's not the same, but you can still enjoy, you know, being in the bush again and being at the beach again. That probably makes no sense, does it?
It does make sense. And it does make sense that the triggers can be, you know, those little things. I think it's really hard thinking that you have this view out your window that you see all the time that triggers you. And I guess that's that, you know, most farmers live on the dairy farm as well. So they've got constant reminders too. So I think that would make a lot of sense to them.
Yeah. Yeah. Because they would have been doing this or that. And then maybe now they can't. So, yeah, it is. It's really hard. It's hard to wrap your head around it. But then I guess obviously they must love the land like I love the bush and the ocean. So you can still kind of get out there and enjoy it. Maybe it's just not the same.
Yeah, and I don't think you'd enjoy living in the desert.
I don't know. No, probably not. I know, it's so silly. I kept going on, oh, I've got to move, I want to move. Yeah, because you would have just bring everything back up, but we're still here.
Sam, you've been diagnosed with osteopenia, which is low bone density, and spinal cord injuries often cause rapid severe osteoporosis with increased risk of fractures. How important are dairy products to your diet?
Huge. That's so funny, because the first time I went and had a bone density scan, I was horrified. It must have been pretty early on after my accident. And then the lady's like, well, yeah, I'm sure it was a lady. And she's like, oh, you have the bones of a 75 to 80-year-old. I was just like, oh, my God, I couldn't believe it. You know, in my mind, I'm like, how can that be? You know, I was so active. I used to run all the time. How can my bones be so brittle? But, yeah, it happens really quickly because I don't weight bear. So, yeah, dairy is huge. because I have if I break anything, like if I break my bones, I'm kind of buggered. So yeah, no, I do drink a lot of milk, and I love cheese and lots of yogurt. So no, calcium. I need the calcium because I can't afford to break anymore.
Definitely not. And we're very pleased to hear that you enjoy Australian dairy products.
No, we do. That's so. Oh my god, you got no idea how much milk we go through. Our youngest Ollie, he just drinks so much milk. And now, because now he's a personal trainer, he's always at the gym himself. He'll come home and just like, yeah, just lives on milk. Milk or water. So it's a good thing. So thank you, farmers.
Oh,
I know,
lovely.
It's so funny. Even Ollie, he's 18 now, and as we still call milk milky. Oh, you need your milky? Yeah, oh, no, couldn't do without the milk.
Excellent. Lastly, and I'm personally very okay if your answer is no because it gives me some permission, but is there any goals that you still wish to achieve in the next 5 years?
Yes. I would like to become a four-time world champion. So I've got a few comps coming up this year. So I need to start. Well, I've been kind of got back into the training, but I need to kind of ramp it up, I think. So, yeah, that would be amazing to be a four-time world champion. And also, we are ambassadors for Tourism Australia. So, man, hopefully we could get to travel around Australia more and, yeah, show the world how awesome Australia is.
Absolutely.
Fantastic. I love Australia. Australia, I reckon, is the best country in the world.
It really is.
I know, and I know that's biased because obviously we're Aussies and stuff, but seriously, when you go overseas and you come back, you just think, geez, it's beautiful here. And we're so lucky. We're so lucky because it's so safe and it's such an awesome country.
I agree. I firmly agree. We'll make sure you drop into some dairy farms in your travels.
We will. I love cows. I told you a while ago, I love cows. This is so beautiful. I used to say to Cam, I want like a mini cow. If you could get like a little teeny cow, I'd love that. They're so adorable.
Well, I will work on that for you.
Thank you. Anyone with a tiny cow, like the little runt, I'll have it.
And I will be watching you achieve your goal of becoming a fourth-time world champion. I'm sure you will achieve that. Thank you so much for your time and your honesty today, Sam. It's been really wonderful what you've been willing to share with us. Really appreciate it.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. Yeah, anyway, you have to keep it real, right?
Absolutely, yes.
Can't sugarcoat it, no way. Yeah, I think that's why people kind of like our story is because we do keep it real.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I think your authenticity and your honesty around, you know, you have great experiences, but then you have those dark days and
totally.
Just, you know, that permission that, you know, that is okay that people feel that way and it's okay to share those thoughts and,
yeah,
you know.
It is. Yeah, totally. It's okay to have a shitty day. Everyone has bad days. No, it's true though. You know, so some people are so scared about saying like, you know, how much they may hate a situation or, you know, they're having a really bad day, but it's okay. I think it's okay to have a bad day. There's always like, yeah, there's light and darkness. All the time.
Absolutely. And I think that's what makes you so relatable and lovable is that we see sometimes these inspirational figures, which we look up to, but we don't see them having those dark days. We don't hear about their struggles. And then it makes us feel inadequate and that we shouldn't be having those things either. Whereas in your story, I think there's that really raw honesty and balance between how you feel and what you experience. And it's meant a lot to me. And I'm sure as our listeners watch your movie and read your books, they will just come to look up to you more and more. So thank you again very much.
Thank you.
And we'll leave our listeners with some episode notes and links to the Young Dairy Network conference details where we will see you in person.
Yeah,
which we can't wait.
Awesome.
Thank you so much, Sam.
Thanks, Carly.
To find out more about Samantha Bloom and her incredible story, check out the episode notes for links. If this episode raised some personal issues for you, we have also placed links and information in the show notes. If you'd like to find out more about Dairy Australia's national events, including the Young Dairy Network calendar, please visit the events calendar, which can be found on our website at dairyaustralia.com.au. Thanks very much for listening, and bye for now.